Welcome to Girlflower Podcast with Vic, Jess and Liz. We will be bringing you relaxed conversations and inspirational chinwags with florists and growers to keep you company in your workspaces, in the car, over a cuppa or wherever you'd like to listen. We hope to help you along on your own floral journey. While we have you here, if you are enjoying our podcast, please press the like or subscribe button in your favourite podcast provider. This will help us to reach out to our whole floral community and spread the word. This week, Girlflower Podcast chat with Lucy Vale of Lucy Vale Floristry, who specialise in large-scale weddings, events and installations. Lucy is a studio-based designer located in London. Jess and I have an absolutely wonderful chat with Lucy. It was like talking to an old friend. We hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as we did.
Gotta say though, I do think that's what's exciting. I feel like we've got to shout out about it this year because I think a lot of my clients don't know enough about on the growing side. What they don't realise is how much work, God, I mean, the amount of work I see mum do, how much work goes into actually growing those flowers, and so much trial and error. And of course, like, because of the cost. So it's nuts. I think people just don't realise. My clients definitely don't. They like the quick snap. Let's go big. Don't care where it's come from, which is what we're changing.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also some florists are feeling really kind of bullied by British growers. You know, there's all of us going, buy British, do this. And they're all a bit kind of like, oh my God,
really?
I just feel a bit. There was a, I've just on Saturday, just came back from a Flowers from the Farm conference. And it was just amazing. But there's some florists there that only use British grown and just trying to source things and the quality of them. And
yeah. You know,
and they, so there's all these different problems before you even get down to the actual consumer. And you're right, some of them love British. You know, some people come to me because they only want British and they love it and they don't really care what flowers they're getting as long as they're seasonal. And other people just over the head don't care, just want flowers.
I know, but then I think that's the difference also now, and it's probably the same with your events as well, because they're high end, is that it's not just about being British, it's actually the quality of the flowers. So that's what, like, mum and I have been taught, and it must be the same thing with you as well, is that it's got to be the quality. It's, you know, those stem lengths have got to be a certain height, the colors have got to be, and it's also got to be something that's very different that you can't find anywhere else. So I think there's like a, and I get it for florists in that, like, you know, British flowers, I think beforehand used to be more expensive than Holland, but now, I mean, oh my God, a delphinium in the summer from Holland, £7 a head. How nuts.
And it's only going to go up this year because they can't, the supply and demand is all a bit weird and, you know, transport, and we were just saying about, you know, heating and transport and all of that kind of stuff, it just goes up. So yes, you're going to get those lovely standard lengths and know exactly what you're getting from Holland. But when I used to be only florist and buy things in as well, you know, you can spend £7 on those delphiniums and you can open them and they can literally just rain down on the ground.
Yeah. I know, crumble. So true, exactly. But I think that's the thing, is that I think everyone will be going British. I think it's the problem is the logistics, like you said.
Yeah.
And I do think, this is naughty to say, but I do think that, like, some people, the quality is not as good, but it's the whole thing shouting out that it's British. But, you know, we're trying to work hard to support the growers, and equally, you know, we expect a really high quality, because it's our name on the table as well as a grower. But that's why I think I've met, like, the most amazing people who have got incredible, like, you interviewed Vic and Barney. Oh my God, they're great, and the quality is insane. Yeah. And they've worked so hard to make sure that it's, like, you know, that beautiful. And I saw your roses as well, like, it's that quality that it's hard work to get there. I mean, mum's trying to get there at the moment, and it's still, we haven't quite got that stem length.
Sometimes you don't, but I think it's about being honest with the people that are buying from you as well. So when I'm selling to my florists, if they want something, and I'll say, look, they're only going to be good for jam jars and hand ties.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, and I'll do those, but then this will go in your in your large arrangements and large urns and things like that. And if you having a bit of floristry knowledge has gone a long way, because I know what I would accept and what I would use them for. And sometimes if you know somebody's got them just for a wedding or just for an event, you can say they're going to be great for that, but don't put them in your retail stuff that's going to last a week because they're not great right now and things. So it's about
totally I think, and that's what I think we've been educated by you guys, as well as being like, and I mean it's great because you're a florist as well, so you understand, but also being like, I know that this works and this doesn't in certain arrangements. But it's so, and you know what, it just makes the job more fun, because I tell you what, I've got florists who have been in the industry for like 30 years turn up, and you know they work for other florists, big florists in London, and they're mega, and they turn up and they're like kids in a candy shop when the bush flowers arrive, because they've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it's when you invite people to the farm to have a look round, and you know, and especially when first starting, some of those florists hadn't ever really been to a farm before, and I'm like, oh my god, please don't look at the weeds, and this isn't done and that's not done, and they don't see it, they just see a field full of blooms, and it's like,
oh yeah, meadows,
that and that and that and that.
Yeah. I now say to like our growers, being like, god, Jess, I think I've got to go, do you sell to London florists as well?
No. I've not had enough growing space and enough flowers to sell down into London. If somebody came to me and they said, right, I want everything in your field, bring it down, I'd be like, yeah, I will sell to, I'm not going to be fussy about who I sell to. It's just whether or not I would have the quantity to
get. Totally. So I now, when you say about the meadow flowers, I now say to mum, and I use Barney and Victoria and then Marston Flower Farm. And I say, I just want 600 meadow flowers, and they've got to all be these three types of colours, but otherwise what it is, it doesn't matter. Mm. And that's what makes it so fun. Vic, you must have the same thing of being like, when all the flowers arrive.
I love British. I do love British, and I need to use more. I find it really hard to get the quantities.
Yeah.
That's my only bugbear, really, is trying to get the actual stem count up. I use Jess where I can as well, but a lot of our growers locally, they're growing on smaller plots. And also a lot of them are florist farmers. So a lot of them are using their own products, which why not? If you can grow it, you can make stuff, you know, let do it. You know, that's the way to do it. So I do find it hard to get my quantities. Which is a right pain for me.
You should speak to Marston Flower Farm, because, you know, I've had on average about like 5,000 stems in total for Floriston and Marston. Marston have now gone, you know, Floret Flowers.
So
Marston's wanting to be that in the UK.
Wow. Where are they based?
They are based up in, I know where it is in the map, but I always forget where it is. I know they're like 2 hours away from London, and they are, let me just check it out. But she goes everywhere.
Right, okay.
And I use her from I prefer Barney for the springtime flowers and Mum for springtime. And then when it gets into summer, because of the quantities, I've now spoken to Kim was also a florist. So she knows what, and she's exactly the same, Jess, you, with knowing exactly this goes in for the buds, this goes in for the big arrangements. And oh my God, when I talk about big arrangements, she's got foxtail lilies, which are, I'd say this year they were like 2.5 meters.
Wow.
And they lasted for 3 weeks. I used it for like three weddings. And I said to the brides, I was like, you know, this has been used beforehand. Like, would you even tell? And they were like, no way. And like different parts flowered in different ways, different colours came out for different weddings. By the time it got to mine, they were fully orange. Wow. And like a week before they were like cream. It's insane. But I've used it, but she's really doing on the quantities. She's gone big.
She has gone big. I'm just looking at her aerial photograph and going, That's nuts. My God, that is a big bit of land. And she hasn't got much of a polytunnel, which is very nice to see.
I know. I think she's got like one polytunnel.
Yeah.
And then apparently the cows like literally mowed into it at the beginning of this year. That's the other thing that I've got so much respect for you guys, is that like at least we can slightly control. whereas like you, it's completely out of your control.
Well, Jess is moving farms at the moment as well. So she's literally shifting over. Jess has lost a load of stuff, haven't you?
Well, I lost all of my dahlia. And I think I've learned a lesson from that, because the season was slow to start and then went on for such a long time with that mild autumn. So we all left our dahlia in and we kept on cutting them and go, brilliant, we've still got dahlia to sell. And then when you took them out of the ground to dry off, and then it suddenly went cold. And the dahlia tubers didn't get time to dry off properly. And so, I mean, I've lost some, you know, I've lost all of mine, but some people have lost a lot more than me. So I just know that this year, whether or not my flowers are in full bloom and looking gorgeous or not, 1st of October, dahlia's finished, they're coming out and they're getting bone dry before they get put away.
You know? Yeah, good idea.
You just learn your lesson, and there'll be something else. You know, I've brought an awful lot of chrysanthemum, the lovely bloom chrysanthemum that look like dahlia.
Yeah,
incredible. Polytunnel. So when I say, no, I've not got dahlia, but I've got these, you know, that's just what you do.
I think that's also another thing for training florists. I've had in my head, and Barney and Victoria always take piss out of me for it, is I've had in my head, I always imagine a chrysanthemum like a petrol shop flower, and my clients think the same thing. However, when Victoria and Barney brought up those like really mega ones, I was like, oh my god, they look like a big daisy mixed with like a peony mixed with a dahlia, like all in one.
I absolutely hate chrysanthemums, and I've always said it up until this year. I'm like, no, never see a chrysanthemum in my life, ever. And honestly, they are just insane.
Yeah. I think it was before, because the stems are so rigid.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, it's like too garish. And it looks, in my head, you know, that like really old school gladioli mixed with chrysanthemum, like, ooh. And then these came out. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And so, what's the variety called where they're the really big, and they're like light pink.
I can't remember. I'm thinking of Vienna copper, but that's that kind of that.
Oh, yeah, those are insane.
I had those other ones. I can't remember what they're called.
Avignon.
Yeah. Stunning.
Mm. What were your ones, Vic?
Vienna copper. I used them on a job in, I think it was like late October. Oh my God, they were the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. I was just like, just get the roses away. I'm not even bothered.
I know. I've not the same. I've been like, I'm actually quite against roses now, because I'm like, they're quite boring. Whereas like, put loads of meadow flowers and dip. And also what's so cool is that no one's ever seen these type of flowers before. And so you go into a job being like, oh yeah, I've got a winner. It's so different. And then everyone's talking to you about it and you're like, oh, and it's the so-and-so variety. And they're like, how do you even know this? I was like, I didn't. I have been educated by the growers.
It's true. You get a very different look to your arrangements when you're using absolutely dead straight uniform with uniform heads. You get that. You do get a more uniform look, and that can be what you want. But even if you use, you know, 70% Dutch and then just put in those random roses that's gone a bit off, or the stance that you didn't stake, and it just changes it completely. And foliage as well, just having non-standard foliage, you know, a bit that kind of goes madly off to the left and a bit
I love that,
and it's just amazing.
That's my favorite. Do you know what though, I find really hard with British foliage is that's the cost that I can't like compete with within the flower market when they use like lots of different British, like from Scotland, from Cornwall. And then I go to individual growers being like, I want to support you guys on the foliage wise. I still can't. And it's the same. Kim and I have battles about it but like, is that, you know, you get a bundle from the flower market and it's £18, and one bundle would do my urn, like, well, I use like a bundle and a half. However, then from a grower, they always charge like £1.50 because the stem length is amazing per stem. And it just, it gets so expensive.
Yeah. And in my mind, I also find it really hard to work out quantities as well. Because when you get a bundle, you know you know what it's going to do.
Exactly.
But I find that really tricky because I get all of my foliage from market just because I know exactly what I'm getting. I know how tall it's going to be, how big the bundle's going to be. And it's
so difficult. That's the one thing that is like kind of like changing, being like, oh, how can I? And I get it because I see from mum's side growing all of these trees for it and like how long it takes for them to be like, I get that. But it's just financially, even with the really big scale jobs, I still can't afford it. I know the one thing that I can afford in the summer is the massive rose trails.
Oh, I love those. Oh,
aren't they amazing? And then you get 10 stems of those and you know that it's a real feature. And like maybe it's the lilac as well in the spring. Again, like that's another thing that you can kind of justify because you're like, it's a flower. So of course I'm gonna spend this amount. But in my client's head, is foliage should be cheaper than flowers, which is wrong. But equally, it's hard when you're doing a big arrangement or we do these massive archways to then be like, the budget then goes down lots if you're using really expensive individual stems of foliage. That's the one.
But when they're going to get lost, it gets lost anyway, doesn't
it? Exactly. Yeah. We spent £1.50 a stem. Mm. So I know that's really bad to say, but I'm trying to...
I think you're doing your bit anyway, Lucy. Yeah. You're doing plenty already to, you know, support local and British. You're doing a lot, you know.
Yeah. But it's interesting though, isn't it? Because I do find that like, you want to support as much as possible. And then there's also like a reality of being like, but how can I also, I'm a business as well, that I've got to, I want to support as much. And what's been the coolest is that, you know, we've got so many stems from British growers and I've now seen Kim's farm nearly double in size because all of us have supported her. Likewise, mum has doubled in size. And so I know that we're going to be able to be fully sustainable by British flowers from these farms because of us helping for all of these big events. However, it's that time between November to March that I can't afford to shut down. Like, and not work and just do British. And I can't just do dried flowers because my clients, it's just such good money at Christmas that...
Yeah, and I think that they're it's just about what the client is happy to have. Because obviously, if you're having a wedding between November and kind of March time,
you
really want lovely flowers still. You do. And yes, there might be some, there might be some early flowering branches and you'll be able to get British Alstroemeria, anemones, narcissi and everything, not from necessarily near you, but I think if anything from the UK, used within the UK, can be classed as local. So there will be things, but it's definitely not that lovely floriferous wedding. It's more like if you said to somebody, I can create you Narnia. That's what your winter wedding
does look awesome. If you had loads of candles, looks so cool. And one thing I really want to do is do, you know, Harry Potter, when you go in to the when you go into the dining room and there's all those floating candles, that is my aim, to try and get a client to go for that ceiling with like loads of floating candles.
Well, you're putting it out into the ether now. It will come.
There'll be somebody that's like, I didn't even know that was possible. That's what I
know. And then it'll be me and my team being like, for God's sake, Lucy, why have you done it again? Being like, we've got such a short turnaround. We have to wire individually those candles. The
tangled fishing wire. And that'd be so funny. Let's talk about your career and how it started and where you kind of started from, and has it always been flowers or was there something before flowers? Tell us how you began this journey into floristry.
So I was 16 when I'd been making Christmas wreaths, and I was taught by this amazing woman called Laura Lee, and who used to work for Ken Turner. And anyway, she taught me how to make these wreaths. And I did that since I was 16. And then when I got to university in the last year, this woman called me up and said, can you do my daughter's wedding? To which I was like, I have never done anything like it, but it sounds so much fun. Called up this woman.
Did you study at university, was it?
History of art.
Oh, okay.
And I'm actually never been an academic. I always wanted to go to art school. I wanted to be a print designer. I was never that person who would sit and write essays, and still am not now. But I did it, history of art, because I was like, I want to get a good grade or whatever. And I managed to get good grades at A level. So did it. My last year, this woman called me up and said, can you do my daughter's wedding? To which I'd never done that before. And I called up the woman who taught me how to do my wreaths when I was 16. And I was like, do you think I can do it? And she was like, 100%, you've got the creative talent, do it. So I taught myself off YouTube for 6 months how to make, I came up with these bonkers ideas. And like I said, I've always been quite artistic. I love changing spaces. So I was like, I'm going to have these suspending balls of flowers from the ceiling, and then up the poles, I'm going to do all of these flowers. And I first meeting that I went had with this bride, I'd cut out these photographs of flowers and put it all in a sketchbook to show her. All of the flower names were in Latin because of my granny's book, and I printed them out, showed to the client. The mother was like, I think you'll find that's not that flower, it's this one. And I was like, oh, but we're gonna go for something quite similar. And anyway, I would, off my parents, like in their garage, I literally suspended these balls and would swing off them to make sure that they wouldn't fall down. And we had, like, from the first wedding, I did it with one, I got my friend involved, and we had 20 minutes sleep in 24 hours. And I mean, I can say it now, but we did this archway, which I basically strapped on to Mary at the front of the church, because worried it was going to fall down. We did it, and it was the most exhilarating, so much fun, changed the space. And oh my God, the reactions from the clients was amazing. And from that, I basically called up this party planner, who had done some talks at university. And I called her up and I said, who's the best florist currently in the world? I absolutely love, I think I've found my calling, but I really want to learn and train. And they said this company called Tuscany Flowers in Florence. And they, you know, they've done Kim Kardashian's and George Clooney's wedding. And we were basically in the middle of nowhere, just outside of Florence, working in this massive studio. And there were florists from all over the world who had come to work there. And they definitely thought I was a lot better than I was, because I begged them for 3 months and was like, oh yeah, and I did a wedding this summer. And, you know, I'd been recommended by this person. And I turned up and they asked me to do a showering wired bouquet, which, oh, you know, they take 2.5 hours to do, and it's one of the hardest things to do. And I tried to do it, and they chucked it at the wall and said, not good, not burning. And I got this Korean girl at, this was like at 8 o'clock in the evening, to teach me through the night how to make a showering bouquet. And so I didn't have any sleep. She taught me, she was absolutely incredible. And the next day went back, did it, and yeah, and I was there for a year, and trained with them for a year, and then trained in Venice, and still was getting call ups from, because I guess, you know, doing a wedding is the best publicity, isn't it? I had so many call ups from this one wedding, and so came back to England, started doing some of my own stuff, and worked for, at the same time, freelancing for Rob Van Helden and Nikki Tibbles. And then suddenly was like, God, I've got so many call ups. And also I had that drive to really do something different. Set up on my own properly, which was a terrifying thing, because actually January to March is no pennies. Nothing comes in. And suddenly you're like, oh God, I've done a terrible jump. But I actually think it was one of the hardest things. And I worked in a little shipping container in London, to which when I had florists who came to work for me from Rob Van Helden's and stuff, they were like, oh my God, how are you here? Like, it's not very safe. But I was so determined. And now I've been running the business for 7 years, which has been really great. We had, during when COVID hit, that was probably the worst points, because that was meant to be my moment. I had a fully booked summer, and I was meant to do the main installation for Chelsea, doing that full. Do you remember they had that tunnel?
Yes.
I was meant to be doing that, covering the whole thing in flowers, planted upside down with trees coming up. And it all got axed because of COVID. Yeah, but I refused to give up and delivered food and flowers to people's doorsteps with another caterer. And to my husband's dismay, working until like 10 o'clock at night, not packing the van, but instead like literally climbing up steps and steps of people's houses to go and deliver these food and flowers. But actually, I would say that that was the best thing for me, because not only did I meet so many new people, I also met Barney and Victoria, because I realized I couldn't get Holland flowers. We only got British. And that's suddenly when I realized there is something very, very exciting here, of which I never knew about. And I went to my mum and I said, I think we've got to start growing, because this is like something I've never seen before. And I think, again, that was the birth of Florist and Flower Farm, but also was the birth of my jobs. No one job ever looks the same because of using these British flowers. But I probably gobbledooped the whole way through.
I'm still stuck at the beginning where you said, you know, you had this wedding come up, and then all of a sudden you've got all these massive ideas for it. Because a lot of people kind of cut their teeth on, you know, a few bouquets and a couple of buttonholes and things. But it seems to me that you had no fear of just jumping in and just going big before you even knew what you were doing, really. I think it's
Going straight to the top, not being like, oh, let me go and work for this little florist in this village and let me learn a bit. You're like, no, I'm going for the best. And then when you came back to London, you're working for the best. Like there's no messing around at the bottom.
Yeah, well, I think I probably should have gone from the bottom, because I would have learned so much more. But I think that's what's been the same with a lot of my jobs as well, is that I look at the big picture. I don't look at necessarily as always at the tiny details. And now that from like learning, I look far more like this year I've said to our team is like the year of detail, where we're looking at the tables, what the fruits and the flowers all coinciding. But I think my thing has always been go big or go home, create something extraordinary and create a world. And for me, set design, I get so excited when I go to the ballet and I see how quickly those designs change, the sets and things like that. So for me, I was always looking at the space as opposed to what's on the table. I wanted to look at what's around you and what are you moving into? What's that world that you're walking into? I wanted to be more of an artist, I guess. That's what inspired me. And so I guess like that was the main thing, which was like, oh my God, I can change a space in a short period of time. And I fed off, sounds awful to say, but I fed off my clients' reactions for being like, oh my God, okay, maybe I'm quite good at this, so maybe I'll try again and go bigger. But oh my God, the amount of calls, and my team say the same, is that the amount of calls I call now, I've got an amazing structure guy, and I leave from seeing a client going, literally selling them the world, being like, you're going to go into this space and we're going to see this all around. It's going to be all encompassing, all of this. And then I leave the meeting going, oh God, how do I do it now? But that's all comes after.
Because there's always, and I think if you have a creative brain and you can see the end result, and you don't necessarily know how you're going to do it, but there is always there is always a way. And even on the day when you're doing setup, if things don't go quite right, you've got all these minds there and somebody will come up with something that works. It's like you don't need to panic about it because there will be a conclusion. There will
be an answer. I think also the other thing is like I've got people around me who are so incredibly talented. And yes, I come up with these really big ideas, but they're the ones, you know, I think when it's interesting when you quote for a job and things like that, and you people say, oh gosh, you know, your team is X amount. But like we are architects. I'm the architect. I've got incredible builders. You know, we create these spaces in less than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the how and the why, it all comes together. I sell the dream and then my team and I, we all work together to build it. And I've got to say, and I said this to this girl who is starting this year, I said, you know, at the end of the day, you want to create something totally different, totally extraordinary and inspire people. And the how and why is it's all of us working together as a team. But I don't know. It's so much fun. Oh, that's what I also said is that if I ever become comfortable in what I do, I know I'm in the wrong job because it's me. I run off adrenaline and having, you know, we did the V&A in November, which was one of the highlights, and we had a 45-minute turnaround. So we had like 15 crew on site to do everything, and I was determined to not use any Oasis. We individually tubed every single flower.
Is that the one with the ceiling installation where it's all amazing?
It's that like quick turnaround that we all just. I love that you
love a bit of fear and adrenaline and that you feed off of that, because a lot of people crumble under that sort of pressure. It is helpful to have, but basically balls of steel, isn't it?
I guess also the other thing is, you know, when you're on the other side, then you think, God, what fun. And at the time, oh my God, my husband is like, I have a book next door to my bed where I'll be writing ideas or the hows, like a week before, of being like, if this happened, then I'll do this. And it's that panicking beforehand that you're like, why the hell did I do this? Why? But actually it always works out. And like Chelsea Flower Show last year, we did one of the biggest entrants up there was Shane Connolly, where I created a 6 meter high floral arch full of 3,000 plants.
It was very beautiful.
Gorgeous. So much fun, but my God, that was stressful. And I remember Shane saying to me beforehand, being like, it's probably going to be one of the biggest logistical nightmares of your career. and he was completely right, but because we literally had to start at like 10 o'clock at night and then we had to be off site by 6 o'clock in the morning, so that was our hours. So we literally worked through the night, and then, you know, usually for a wedding or an event, you're the behind the scenes. So you've done the job, you've worked incredibly hard, and you can leave, whereas on that job they're like, you know, we finish on Sunday literally at 6:30 in the morning, press were arriving at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I was knackered. We'd done 3 days, 72 hours on, I probably had 3 hours sleep, and I said to the security guard, I was like, please, do I have to come back? Can I just come back at like midday? I just need 4 hours sleep. And he was like, no, you are turning up. He was like, it's one of the biggest events, you've got to turn up. So I literally, an hour later, stumbled, eyes half opened, with a hell of a lot of makeup on. Try and act the part that I was feeling fantastic.
Because when you're doing an event, when you're doing a wedding and you're absolutely on your knees and the last thing you do is go and deliver that bridal bouquet, I just always think, please don't get me in the photograph. Like, go, because I really, I could just need, I need a wash. Like, I've got food in my teeth. I might have like eye bogeys. Like, just literally don't get me in the photo. But then you get to go home and have a wash and go for a sleep. But I can't imagine then having to kind of go, right, quickly brush your teeth, get up. We're
on the same face for a week.
Unbelievable. So what were the biggest lessons that you learned from doing Chelsea?
Oh,
I do it again.
no. So this is the big news that I am going to say, but we can't say for like another 3 weeks.
That's fine.
But so we are doing the other entrance, the main public entrance this year, which is very exciting. And when I say go big with designs and got to go bigger than last year, this year is all about, I mean, I've really set my team up for an absolute nightmare, but
you must have learned. So going back to Vic's question about what you learned from doing it, so what lessons are you taking over then into this year to
with the Royal Gate, it's different lessons. So I think anyone who takes that on, you know, it's your timings, the hours that you have from like 4 o'clock, from 10 o'clock at night till 4 o'clock in the morning. We practice and practice weeks beforehand of how we could logistically do it. And like a wedding, an event, this is on a different scale because you can't plan enough for it. Because the thing is that you've got so many other gardeners who are coming through the gates who are meant to be done at 10 o'clock, but aren't. So every time someone comes through the gate, all of your equipment has to go to the side. So you could be starting up in that middle of the archway and doing that first section. But once someone comes through, then it's, you know, you have to start again. So you think you could go smaller in scale and do something. Even if you did do that, it's the going in and out. You have to just overly plan. And I think if I was to do it again, I would probably try and pre-make lots of sections. But I'd also say to anyone who does it, do it. It's one of the like biggest challenges. I think it's one of those things as well that it's sort of showing you as being like, you know, I'm this florist and I'm willing to take on the challenges, and it's one of the biggest challenges definitely of my career. You've sort of got all eyes on you, and it's more the people in the industry that I cared so much about of being like, I can do this. And especially, you know, following after someone like Shane Connolly, who is just a wizard. And you know, when he says it's a logistical nightmare, you've got to really show up. I called Shane like 3 times beforehand, being like, okay, so when you said this, what did you mean? And my colleague was like, I just think you should stop calling and asking questions because you're just freaking yourself out.
So this year, you're not doing it with Shane.
No, and I didn't do it with Shane.
No, Shane did a separate.
Shane did the last biggest arch, and then we went a bit higher. And did and put 3,000 British plants in, and then also got a British craftsman to make these amazing urns because I wanted part of our wedding
elements and stuff as well.
Exactly. I'd say main tips and why you do. I think more people have got to get involved as florists to do Chelsea Flower Show because it's a massive competition. And also it's a big challenge. Like, when are you gonna, you know, we all have it with our clients and things like that, but you know, it's a challenge with your industry. It's a challenge to really to create something incredible and to really shout out about, you know, what you really believe in. So yeah. I think and that's why when after Chelsea I thought never again, because that we had a sponsor and the logistics were all from, sadly, from RHS at the time. Everything was quite disorganized. Now it's all changed for this year, but it was quite disorganized. So the hard thing was is that we really showed up and I felt like on their side, it wasn't as much.
Right.
They didn't really have as much. Whereas this year, they're really getting out all the stops and making sure that that's not the case. Because I think, you know, the thing is as well, if you do something amazing, you want there to be amazing press about it and things like that. And unfortunately, last year, I think it was just, it wasn't as good as we thought it was going to be.
That's that's something I was going to ask you, actually, like how the coverage would have helped your business if you got much more from that. But obviously, it wasn't enough. Because I saw you on telly.
That was my mum literally going up, being like, this is what we've done. And everyone was like, where is Chelsea's like press? Why are they not all out here? And instead it's like mum running around like a headless chicken.
See, that's what a shame that is. What a shame.
It was such a shame. And I think, but for me, it was the main thing of being like, yes, okay, the press wasn't what we wanted it to be. But it was more a stamp of being like in the industry.
Yeah.
And that was like the biggest feat for me. I think also the thing is I have a bit of what's that saying when you feel like you don't belong somewhat sometimes when you're like, oh, I don't know whether I like, am I just running? Am I just like creating something? Like, is this actually good? And I think you always question yourself. And I guess it's good to be like that because otherwise you'd never get better. But you know, always that sort of self-doubt. I think Chelsea was suddenly like, oh my God, we've done something that was meant to be one of the hardest things. And actually we've done it and it's better than what we thought it was going to be. So
you think you'll find it easier this year? No, like, cause you've got, but you've done it once. And so all these things, like you said, like, the logistics are going to be better this year and you might pre-make some bits to get to go up. Do you think or do you think it's still just going to be
like... I've created a bigger challenge.
Yeah, it's going to be much bigger. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, last year was all about plants, whereas this year is properly all about like technique and the individual like stem quality. You know, we're trying to use all British flowers, but you know they've got to last for a week. Yeah. And this is about showing off the individual stem. And so if one dies, the whole structure, the whole thing will be thrown off. So it's slightly, I've created a massive, massive challenge for everyone. But
you can get some time for some maintenance. So like every day you can go and refresh certain bits if you need to.
Yeah. But again, it's going to be practicing beforehand to being like, you know, we want to use lots of ranunculus. Use lots of ranunculus. I also want to use lots of meadow flowers, but they don't last as well. So we're just gonna keep on practicing beforehand. And Kim and Mum, I mean, poor them. It was the same as last year. I was like, do you think we'll have this definitely by Chelsea? And they're like, I hope so, but I have no idea.
Yeah.
So you sort of design something on hoping that you're gonna have that, but there's a slight panic of what if we don't, and we're definitely not going to use Holland flowers. So we've just got to adapt quickly if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot scarier to use. Sorry, Jess. It's a lot scarier to use cut flowers in these kind of installations than plants.
Totally. And you're using also everything's going to be in test tubes.
Sure.
Everything
that runs up quick as well. The water.
Oh, I know exactly. So yeah. I'm like. That's the thing. It's like maybe the ranunculus won't drink as much. And just trying to learn what works and what doesn't. But I think if it works, I can then use this, chop this installation up and use it into so many things for weddings and events. If it works. If it doesn't, well, we're just going to have to.
You're going to make it work, though. You have to make it work. You have to, don't you? It will work. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be gorgeous. It might be, you know, a slightly different design than you initially planned because you never know what you're going to get. But it's going to be beautiful and I'm really excited to see it. And congratulations on it as well.
The floristry this year at Chelsea is really going to be highlighted. I know that the Flowers on the Farm members were kind of sent some information on briefs that we could apply for. So around Chelsea, they're having a whole load of like metal drums. Like people are going to be decorating those drums so they can on the top and around the bottom. And they're also, which I'm imagining will be in like the marquee, but it'd be lovely if they were dotted around. They've got like lampposts and everyone and the people are going to be decorating.
Lampposts. Nice.
This has all got to be British foam free.
Yeah, so Kim Marsden's doing one of those, I think.
Oh, you know, I sat there for a whole evening. I drew up all my sketches and I was like, this is going to be absolutely amazing. This is what I'm going to do. And then I was like, I'm not going to submit it. I'm too scared. Well, it's too late now. I've missed it for this year, but I was like, right, next year,
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Also, because you've got nothing to lose. Like, it is.
It's my dream to be at Chelsea on press day and be able to walk around without all those crowds and be able to take all the photographs and be able to basically fangirl everyone, go, I love you.
We've been trying to get press passes for the last gazillion years. Ever since we started the podcast, we've been trying to get press passes.
Yeah, you should. Oh, I'm sure we can get you them, and Shane as well. We can definitely do that. But on that with the... You know what's even better though? It's not just about press day. It's when you're setting up. I don't think whether I was allowed to do this, but we did. Yeah. And at like 11 o'clock, because it was mum came to and dad came to help on the last day. Don't think they really realised the hours. Anyway, it was all completely dark. And the security guard was like, just go and have a little peek. And we had the whole of Chelsea to just go and have a wander around. Look, I obviously didn't like go onto the gardens or anything like that, but it was completely deserted. It did put the fear index into me because I was like, oh my God, they are incredible. It definitely did. But then, I mean, we worked even harder and faster in it. Yeah. But it was so cool.
Oh my God.
Gotta do it.
Well, one day it will definitely happen. I'm really like half envious of the challenge you've got coming up, and half really relieved that I'm not going to have fitness. I can feel the excitement and nerves are kind of are absolutely equal on putting something like that together.
Oh, totally. But you should see also the freelancers, like my team's reactions, being like when they come in, whether it's for a wedding, mostly also for Chelsea, when they're like, "Oh my God, what are you going to push us through?"
Who are your team? So you say your team, how many people do you have like on a full-time basis, or do you just have freelancers?
No, so I have two full-times who are in the office and they're event managers. I've got one who's one called Mimo, who actually was my delivery driver during COVID, and she'd been made redundant from the V&A. And she was a art curator. And anyway, she worked with me, and she started, when we started having our weddings and events back, I was like, I really want to draw this up on CAD, but I don't know how to do it. Anyway, she does it. She's a wizard. And she became full-time employee. She's incredible. She, you know, works so incredibly hard. And then I've got another girl called Autumn, who is also super organized, everything that I'm not. And she's an event planner. And then and she's also incredibly creative. And then my team of freelancers, I actually don't have full-time florists. And Vic, I wonder what you think about this, but in my head, I want someone to come into my studio and be so excited and passionate about what they're doing. I want no one who's going to be bored. I also, when they show up, it could be an 8-hour day, it could be a 13-hour day, but that it's got to be 100%.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe if you took on a full-time florist, then it just becomes...
It's not the same.
I did
have that, and I just think, they get, you know, I never want someone who's bored. I want someone to come into the studio and be excited.
And the thing is, I think it doesn't matter if you've got someone full time. I'm not going to say that it's the same for everyone, but I do think
no matter
how exciting each job is, if you are stuck in one place all the time, it does lose its luster a little bit, doesn't it?
I think I'd be the same as well, though, if I worked for, like, full time. You just, it does. And I think also the other thing is what I've loved about having freelancers is that I learn as much. I think the one thing that I really miss is learning, and I learn on the job, but I miss learning more technical stuff, and I'm constantly learning from overseas, looking at other florists, what they're doing in different styles. But, you know, from having freelancers, as much as they learn off me, I learn off them, and they work from so many different people. So on average, on every job, we have between 8 and 25 on a job. Mm. And then we have crew guys who also assist us because it's such hard, heavy labor. Mm. And yeah, so there's a big team of us. This one big wedding that we've got in March, there is 28 of us.
Whoa, I can't wait to see that one.
Mental.
Whereabouts is it?
In Oxford, and they're having, it's a 3-day wedding, and they're doing 6 venues, and the turnarounds are all so quick. And Mum has planted 13,000 tulips for this one job, and a rat has come and eaten 2,000 of them.
Oh my God.
So, oh, it's just so annoying. So annoying. And I called Victoria and Barney, and they said it's also too early for their season. So, so annoying. But yeah, you just can't predict. I really wanted to use all the British, but yeah.
Nip and Munson, they'll be your best bet, won't they?
Tune. I know, but I hate to say it. I way prefer the home Smith and Munson. It's too
straight.
I think they've done an amazing job. I think they've created an amazing company. But for me, I love the wonky stems. I like something that looks different that you can't buy from the flower market. And the big heads and, like, you know, those colours from tulips, British tulips, are just insane. So I just, that's what I wanted to base this whole wedding. It's all on colour. Yes. Which mixes in my Italian style, mixed with this. It's just, it was sort of like, yeah, it would be beautiful to have English tulips.
Somebody's will be grown, some grower, but you need to look at the growers further down towards Cornwall way, don't
it's
you?
I know. Though, isn't it? It's the volume again. It's the volume.
Well, yeah, but 2,000 tulips isn't all that many. Like, I know it sounds a lot, but it's not. Like, I've got 2,000 tulips in the ground, you know, and I've got mine.
But then I need hellebores. And what hellebores, anemones, ranunculus, tulips, snowdrops. Oh. No, not snowdrops, bluebells.
Beautiful.
My God, you'll get them. You just need to phone up some people and find out.
It's going to be shout out and see whether anyone's.
Yeah.
Also, it's so interesting to meet new growers and see what. See what everyone's got. It's one of the biggest weddings I've ever done. So that's like, you just want it to be all perfect, but that's life.
It will be perfect.
Yeah. On Saturday at the conference we were at, there was 320 growers. So, you know, that's not everybody. I think there's 900 members of Flowers from the Farm. So you've got 900 potential people that could grow flowers for you. So don't.
Oh my God, well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Floriston Flower Farm? Because I know that you said that you guys were missing a trick in 2020, and you're like, right, we need to get grown. And it's your mum who grows everything.
Yeah.
Has your mum got a background in flower growing, or what was she doing before?
Ooh, it's so interesting. So she was and is a photographer,
right.
And she always came to help. Mum's got also the most amazing personality, drive. She's so passionate, and she absolutely loved, I've got to say, like, us, I've got two other siblings, and we're two, that's so awful, three oh. siblings. And my sister and I both run our own businesses. And I've got to say, had it not been for my mum's drive and, like, get, you know, we can do it, I definitely would not be running my own business without her. And so she, from the start of running my business, she would come and help on quite a lot of my jobs, and would see how hard work it was. So she'd constantly be helping. And it was when Barney and Victoria's flowers came up, and I was sending these bouquets of flowers to, because I didn't see my parents for like 6-7 months. I stayed in London. And it's when Mum also saw these and was like, oh my God, they're incredible. But also when it got to September, the dahlias at Floriston, the dahlias are literally the size of my head. The colours are insane. And Mum suddenly got a little bit competitive and was like, oh my God, I think I've got great soil here too. And basically Floriston Flower Farm used to be, well, Floriston used to be owned by Culpeppers, which was a herb grower. And so she was like, I know that the soil is right to grow. So, and she was like, I'm just going to give it what I was like, let's just give it one shot. And if it works for the first year, great. If it doesn't, whatever. Mm. We've got nothing to lose. Thinking that, you know, it was quite easy. Oh my God, it's not easy. So that's why I got so, so much respect. Anyway, but it was so, you know, when the tulips worked, when the ranunculus worked, it was so incredible. And I think it just gave mum that real, she absolutely loves it. She's up at 4 o'clock in the morning. She's constantly watching what other people are doing, learning from them. And, you know, both of us getting together, I wanted to give my clients something that was like they'd never seen before. And she realized that these flowers, when she was growing them, that the colors and the petals and the wonky stems were actually so different to what you could get from Holland, mm. and far more exciting. And I think that's what's given her the real, she's really going for it. But it's also been the thing of seeing my clients' reactions and realizing that what she's growing and building is something extraordinary.
She growing on, like, how much space is there, and does she only grow for you?
So she is she's got half an acre and she does just grow for me because with Barney and Victoria they grow for a lot of different people, and I think mum saw with the logistics and things like that it's really difficult, and mum is a one-man band. She's got help with this amazing guy called Simon. She's desperately looking for pickers because she literally delivers from end of March till October on minimum about 1,000 stems a week.
Amazing.
And you know, in the summer last year, peak season in August, I think we got like nearly 2,500 stems.
That's so my aim. So I'm just moving up to an acre, and my goal is a minimum of 2,500 stems.
Amazing.
That is
the picking that also just takes, so, like, you know, I thought my life with floristry, with the early mornings, was difficult, but oh my God, for you guys it's relentless. Like, you got such early mornings and you have to finish by 12 o'clock, so I've got, so not even 12 o'clock, like probably like 9 because of the heat. But yeah, I've got so much respect, and she's got only half an acre. But she's tightly packed everything in and does a lot of succession planting. I'm obsessed with cosmos. So we're going big on that this year. And we've been growing amazing roses, learning from Victoria and Barney. So hopefully we've been growing them for the last 2 years. So hopefully this is the year. I think she's doubled in size because of what we basically, you think actually how much, I worked out how much we spend on flowers per year with our big events. And like, our events are big, you know, our things, main things is installations. They are not just they're not the bud vases down the table. We are looking at the ceilings. We're looking at trees. We're looking at the whole space. And so Mick, like you were saying, you know, the sheer quantity of stems and how much money we put we spend on flowers is ridiculous. And the fact that maybe 30% of that is now going, hopefully more, is now going just to British growers is the coolest thing, because I'm seeing like how big they're growing with us. Mm. You know, Kim's now going to get a van. And mum's now, you know, built another like so many different patches. And you know,
I saw Victoria on Saturday, and she's told me they've just taken on a second walled garden for this year. So they will be able to grow more for you as well.
Where they are is just, it's incredible. It's like going into a secret garden.
I can't wait to visit.
We've been saying for ages about visiting, haven't we? We've just never got round to it.
I'm just going to go. Whether she's got flowers or not, I'm just going to go because I want
to. You've got to go. But go, I think the best time is, did Victoria say as well, is in spring. Because I'd say Victoria and their roses as well. I'd say that's what they are just, you just can't beat. They are incredible.
We got some of their flowers through the post, didn't we, after we had the podcast recording, and they sent us the most beautiful tulips that came through the post. Yeah. Oh my god, they were like nothing else I've ever seen.
I know, aren't they amazing?
Oh my
earmarked every page where I want to buy roses and the different types. Like they are the
expert. They are wizards.
Roses, yeah.
Yeah, they really are. But that's why I was saying with the March wedding, I called up Victoria and I was like, I'm basing, and said to Mum as well, being like, I'm basing this wedding on your tulips, which just cannot get anywhere else. But I think that's the other thing is like with British growers, is that when you get those jewels, you know, like with Mum, it's Mum's tulips are quite similar to Stokes's. And the dahlias as well. When you get that jewel that you can't find anywhere else, and you just want to share it with other people and shout out about it, because it makes your work lift to another level because of the color and the texture and the wonky stems. And I just think you can't beat that.
Yeah. Where do you draw your inspiration from? Because like you say about your work, you don't ever like anything to look too samey. You like things to look completely unique to what has gone before. How do you keep it fresh?
Well, I look a lot of time as looking to making sure that when I ask growers, I ask for meadow flowers so that I don't know exactly what I'm getting. Another thing is, you know, that you must have the same thing as I used to work off counts for every job, whereas now I will, and it's been very interesting retraining these florists who have also had 30 years experience of being like, we're not going to have 10 roses, 15 of this, that you have like a set amount for the whole church and you run wild with it. There is no set way, which means that every design is different. But so I really look to, I look to a lot of artists. I look to a lot of set design. Architecture and nature, definitely. But I'm massively inspired by set designs and creating this other space. And, you know, I've really made a thing that every month we all sit down as a team and we come up, and it's just a complete creative day where we all come up with three of the best films that we've seen recently, why we really liked it, looking at two artists that we really liked and three people who inspired us, and then asking each other, why do we really like that? What inspires us and how do we want to bring that into our work? And I've got to say, it's been from having a team and to not, because, you know, running your own business is quite lonely, but, you know, from having a team and having different minds, has been the thing that's kept my ideas fresh, because I'm constantly inspired by people who work with me and really elevate me. I mean, I go wild with ideas, but I need the how, I need the organization. And yeah, I'd say it's the people around me who really inspire me, but also making sure that I'm not constantly watching what everyone else is doing and questioning myself too much. I'm really wanting to start just looking at other industries and why they're really interesting.
Such a good way to keep fresh, because as we were talking, I was just thinking about people that I draw inspiration from. So say I'm looking through Instagram and I'm looking at all the florists and growers that I love, just as not going into art and movies, but you kind of have somebody that you obsess over for a little while and you love everything that they do, and then kind of going, oh no, that's their style, and I found somebody else that's doing something different now and I'm really into that. And then you move away from loving as much what they've done and you love something else. So it's like our what we like and what we're inspired by does constantly change. And if you're actually making note of that and taking notice of it, what you're creating will then change, won't it? And that's how you keep it fresh. You can't keep on churning out the same thing and looking at the same people. Otherwise, you'll just do the same, won't you?
Yeah, totally. Also, you know what's another really good idea that I was learning from... I was looking at an architect. Anyway, I have so many ideas in one day. And I find that if I'm on my own, especially on holiday, which never usually happens, my mind starts whizzing and going crazy with ideas. And I went on honeymoon a couple of weeks ago, and my colleague said to me, "You're not allowed to message us until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And you're not allowed to tell us any ideas. You have to write it in a book." And so I wrote all my ideas down in a book and came back and realized, oh my God, the stuff that I started off with at the beginning of the week is totally different to the stuff at the end. And actually, there's a lot of time wasters in there, but there's also some actual gems. And there's two of them out of like the 30 that I'd written down. And then suddenly talking about that with my team, they all said exactly, like, you know, coming up with different ideas. So I think it's also very important to constantly write down what you're coming up with, what those ideas are, but go back to them at the end of the month and think what's important to you and what's not. Mm. Because I think we spend a lot of time, you know, running and constantly, there's quite a lot of time wasting. Whereas actually, if you just focus your mind once a month on all those creative ideas, I actually feel like they could be far more successful than...
I let my ideas run, and before long I've got everything sorted, and then very quickly you could talk yourself out of it. And the ones that stick are the best ones, aren't they? But I'm looking at my stack of notebooks in front of me, knowing that there is all full of stuff that needs to happen. But you're right, once a month just go back and rip the pages out that don't mean anything, and
you can't look at it till that end of the month, because you also can't be bored of that idea. So you have to you can't look at it, can't go back. You've got to, when you think how busy our days are anyway, that you know it's such a good one. And the other one is always asking, which I think I didn't have before I had my team, is always questioning your ideas. Why do you want to do it, and what impact's it going to have? How's it going to make a difference? And then by questioning and having your team question you, it sort of creates something even bigger. Yeah. Whereas beforehand I didn't used to question, I used to just go for it, which I think is a good thing. But I also think some of those ideas could have been way better or bigger had I just asked the questions.
I actually agree with you there, in terms of, you know, putting it out there to your team, because when you knock your heads together, it's always going to be a bigger, better idea than if it's just you solo.
Yeah.
I've always found that. There's people have other ideas on how to approach things, how they can make it better, you know, how to improve, how to make most impact. And I think that's why it's so hard, because I find it really hard when I'm working on my own. I find it a lot more draining on my brain when I can't actually put it out there to people and say, look, what do you think about this? How can it be better? But I think that's what happens to me in January, when I'm like, oh, I haven't seen it.
Tell me about this.
And I literally feel devoid of any creativity at all.
I know. Tell me about it. What is it with all of us, January to March, is just... I get excited for the chill time, but I hate it when I'm in it.
Same. Isn't that weird? All I did, like literally the whole of last year, like the whole tail end of last year, the last 4 months, I just need some time off. All I want to do is sit in front of my computer and just, you know, put proposals together and just sort of kind of sit and be. And now I'm like, get me out of here. Get me back.
I'm exactly the same. I just want to be making things. My admin list has got so big that I've given some of it to Autumn, because I'm just so bored at looking at it. I can't do it. I know it's just going to go on for another 2 weeks. By the time I get to busy season, I wouldn't have done any of the admin stuff.
No, it's all too boring. It's way too boring.
I have got so many packets of seeds. I mean, people on Instagram are putting photos of their seed collection. I'm like, oh dear, I literally have a shelf of seeds all in order, all ready to go. And I can't do anything about it until March, you know, probably nearer the end of March. Yes, I've got jobs that I could be doing, but I just want to see green shoots coming through. I cannot wait, and just itching to go. And but then, you know, from that moment in March when your weddings start and my growing starts, it's going to be boom, boom, boom. And you're not going to get a chance to sit down. And then it'll be this time next year and we'll have forgotten all about how much we needed to rest. We'll just be raring to go again.
I know. But God, like speaking to you too, I've got to say, I had a bit of last week, had a bit of a oh God, January. One, thank God we're out of it. But two, it just gets me so excited because this is why we do our jobs, is that you want that roller coaster, you want that fast paced. It's never gonna be when the time is quiet, it's very quiet. And when it's fast, it's very fast. There's never an in-between. But I feel like speaking to with you guys, it's the same for everyone, and that's why we're in our industry. A lot of people look at us like we're absolutely bonkers.
Honestly, everyone I know who knows, you know, a florist or a grower, they know. They're just like, how? I mean, what is up with you guys?
My sister came to help for one day, and quite funny, I was building these trees, and unfortunately the ones that I'd done for her to take, the bottoms weren't properly secure on yet, and they kept on toppling on top of her. And then equally picking with mum at 6 o'clock in the morning, and she was like, I don't know how you do it. She was like, it just drives me mad. It drives me mad. I can't, I just, no.
My sister never really gets it, actually. She knows what I do for a job, but she doesn't really understand what it really involves.
Yeah.
She's kind of on the outside, and I'm like, I'm so tired. She's like, oh, you're always tired. Or my mum will say to her, oh, she hasn't had time to do that. And she's like, well, you know, we all work, but it's different, isn't it?
It's physical. It's physical. When I first moved in with my boyfriend at the time, he, now husband, thank God. but I didn't think it was going to happen because I was literally up all night. When I first moved in, I'd lived with my sister beforehand, and she just said, Arch, watch out, when it gets to Christmas, all you're going to hear Lucy say is, I'm broken. And in the summer, she'll probably cry every time she comes home on Saturday evening if you want to do something. And I was like, don't be so ridiculous. I'm so different now. I've been doing it for 4 years. I know what's going on. 7 years in, Christmas last year, wailing. Absolutely wailing. I went to the doctors. I was like, my chest feels very tight. And she was like, I think you're having, and I had 10 calls during that doctor's appointment from different clients. And she was like, I think this is down to stress, totally down to stress. I think Christmas is just,
Your Christmas last year, that was absolutely mental. You did some crazy stuff, amazing stuff. Was it your busiest kind of Christmas that you'd ever had?
So last year I made the point, my wreaths is how I started when I was 16. And so I love to pump them full of as many, I've got dried hydrangeas going in there. So mum's flowers that we don't use in the summer, we dry all of them, and then we place them all into wreaths at Christmas. And so they are incredible, and it's mixed with colours, mixed with fresh pines. It looks
really juicy.
Yeah, but they take, 2 hours to do. They're 32 inches. And I probably, because I'm such a perfectionist, I probably make only £20 out of them, each one, because I just keep on pumping them full of other things. So last year I decided not to do wreaths, only keep the expensive ones. And decided to focus my time more on installations. And because that's where the money was better.
Sure.
But with that comes so much stress. It's like doing a wedding every day in a 2 week period. Yeah. And you're not with a restaurant and an installation. It's so much fun because you've got different creative ideas, and it's good, I think, for my mind when I'm putting all of the ideas together. Because it pushes you out of the industry. You have to think in a different way. You have to think about the heritage of the building mixed with the what's important to them. And so you've got different ideas to the weddings and events. So it's good. But it's the, you know, you've got 10 people to deal with, 10 different, you know, opinions. And you know, everyone has so much time to look at an installation. So they constantly want things changed, or they absolutely love it. And then 3 weeks later, they're like, can we change this? And can we do another big thing? And I'd be up a ladder doing these installations, and these people would be coming past going, giving me their card, being like, can you come and do an installation, do our facade of our restaurant? To which I'd stupidly go, yes, absolutely fine. And leave and go, oh my God, what the hell have I done? So there'd be like 2 weeks where I'd be so busy, thinking I was going to be so busy. But actually it went on for 6 weeks of doing these installations. And it, you know, it's great because it's good for cash flow, but at the same time, stress and how I felt at the end of Christmas, I realized I need to get more help and start delegating more, because I think it's the same with both of you, is that as a business owner, it's your face on the, like, on the front. Like, you have to show up time and time again, and you can never get anything wrong, and you have to be a perfectionist. And in my head, for installations, I had to do every single installation. I had to be there front facing. However, I didn't need to do that. Most of the time, the head of the restaurant was never there. Sure. So I'd, you know, we'd be building these facades of buildings in 4 hours, and my hands were knackered. And then you have the mix of being like, oh, well, I meant to have a social life at the same time. My husband's like, we're going to this tonight. I'm like, I absolutely don't want to do that. Every time. And then I'd be the one who get really, like, probably like really quite pissed after 4 hours because I was so tired.
Yeah.
So maybe a bit more of a balance then this Christmas.
Yeah, I think I'm also just going to delegate, so I'm not doing as many restaurants. Yeah. But
I think that's a big thing to learn. We're all so concerned with getting the work and never saying, if you say no, you might not get any work, and this might lead to that, or it might lead to this. But yes, if you're in the doctors with chest pains for stress, you've got to learn to just say no and pick and choose. And it's okay. Like, if you'd have done half those jobs, you'd have still been okay, and you'd have made money, but you'd have been half stressed. Yeah.
You know what, though? It's so much easier said than done, isn't it? I'm saying this now, and then next year I'll be like, okay, so last year we did 30, this year we'll do 50. Moron.
But listen, you can do 50 as long as you've got the teams on it. That's all you need to do, and you can just, you know, they're competent enough to get it all done beautifully. And you'll have a bit more time for some vino or whatever your tipple is.
I also just think Christmas is just not up florist time, is it, to have a social life? Just think that's a reality. January to March is when we should all be having fun.
Yeah, but we're sat here miserable going, where are the flowers? Where are my flowers?
I know.